CBSI and the world. Behind the Black, I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Bob Zimmerman. We're going walking in space. Bob has the complete history of spacewalks, but we begin with the immediate at hand, SpaceX, a private spacewalk. I'm not sure of the language here. Bob, good evening to you. This is private. This is commercial. This is untouched by anyone involved in the military or NASA. What is the significance of this historically? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. Well, first, let me just describe what's going on. The Polaris Dawn private mission to orbit, five-day mission. It was paid for by Jared Isaacman, who's flown previously on a commercial flight. Carries four people, two of which are SpaceX employees. So SpaceX is probably picking up some of the costs of this long flight. This flight had two major engineering goals. The first was to fly the highest orbit and the farthest from Earth that anyone has done since Apollo. And they did that on the first day. They flew up to 870 miles altitude, where the Earth is beginning to look like a globe very clearly. It's not just the curve. You really get a sense it's a globe. While there, they did some radiation research on the human body because that's getting close to the Van Allen belts. Then they lowered the orbit, and then, yesterday they did a spacewalk. This is the first totally private spacewalk. No government hands touch this in any way. The capsule is a Dragon capsule resilience that SpaceX has built. They redesigned the nose, so instead of it being a coupler that can look outside, it was now a hatch with for allowing a spacewalk for people to get out of the capsule and go into space. And they had SpaceX built spacesuits for this, new spacesuits. These suits are not free-flying suits. They have an umbilical cord that provides communications and oxygen to the suit because it's a first spacewalk. This is this spacewalk. So then Jared Isaacman went out for about 10 minutes just outside the hatch. His feet were just inside the capsule at all times, but he was definitely floating free in space. After he did this for 10 minutes, Sarah Gillis, a SpaceX employee, she went out and did the same thing for about 7 minutes. And while they were out, both of them were reporting on a number of engineering things, such as how the suit is functioning, the pressure of the suit, radiation levels, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because this was an engineering test of the suit as well. And then it came back inside and closed the hatch and repressurized the capsule, demonstrating that this whole system now works. This spacewalk was therefore very comparable to the spacewalks, the first two spacewalks done in the 1960s, first by Alexei Leonov for the Soviet Union and then by Ed White for the United States and the Gemini program. In both cases, the spacesuits had umbilical cords. They were very simple. They were mainly designed to test the ability to do a walk in space and have a suit that could at least work in the raw outside of space. And so this achieved this. Now this gives that's the engineering goals. The bigger significance of this is it's private. NASA is irrelevant to this totally. It's a totally private space program that Jared Isaacman has got. This is the first mission of his program, even though it's his second flight in space. He's going to do two more that are going to get increasingly ambitious. And it's private, rocket capsule, spacesuits. Crew, everything's private, and that means it's an old-fashioned American way of doing things. NASA becomes irrelevant in this situation, and that's what's really significant.
I read, Bob, that this did not have a great deal of risk, but there was risk involved, something to do with the fact that they were passing from an environment where they had to increase their oxygen. It was very complicated dealing with
I know what you're going at, John. This has to do with the atmosphere within the spacecraft itself. They use Earth atmosphere inside the capsule, but the suits are not going to have that high pressure. And so there's a lower pressure, so you've got to decompress. It's kind of like going from deep diving, coming up from deep diving to avoid the bends. So they had those kind of issues in depressurizing the capsule and getting into the suits and then repressurizing the capsule and getting out of the suits. And so that involved having the suits being able to lower the pressure within the suit as well. And so that's just complicated engineering, but it's the standard. It's what you do. You have to deal with these kind of things.
Also, spacewalking on a Dragon Is that a practical thing or a stunt? When would you want to? When would you have to do that? Because as I understand, Dragon's essentially a taxi to and from ISS.
You got to once again remember that SpaceX and good engineering is iterative, bit by bit, evolutionary. You develop new ideas. So here, even if they're not going to do a lot of spacewalks from future Dragon capsules, they've made the first preliminary designs of spacewalking spacesuits that can be used on Starship. So you don't think of it as a dead end Dragon. It's spacesuit and design for future missions, no matter what the vehicle is. That's the concept. That's where we're going. So that's how to look at it.
Congress is unhappy with FAA. Why, Bob?
This is more the FAA stuff. There was a hearing in Congress this week, the day after, by the way, SpaceX announced that the FAA is stonewalling its Starship Super Heavy program with absurd regulatory red tape. But this hearing was actually nothing directly to do with Starship Super Heavy. It was a hearing where space industry people and Congress people were blasting the FAA routinely about its so-called Part 450 regulations that it adopted in March of 21, supposedly to streamline and speed up the licensing process required for companies to launch. Because it's done the exact opposite, and I've been noting this in my annual reports on launches that the last 3 years, American new companies and launch procedures seem to have ground to a halt. You got the big companies like SpaceX or the ones that are already regulatory approved launching, but new companies suddenly have disappeared because they can't get approvals from Part 450. And so that's what this hearing was all about. Everyone at the hearing was blasting the FAA except for one witness. That was someone from the FAA who says, oh, no, we're doing everything wonderful and we're really streamlining things and everything is great. But the simple fact is that's not true. And SpaceX's experience with Starship Super Heavy, that's part of the Part 450 regulatory framework that's been adopted that has really made everything difficult. And so this hearing highlighted that failure, but whether anything will happen is another story entirely.
NASA likes everything it does, and it wants more money. Is that a surprise?
No, it isn't. So this was a National Academy's report that was published this week, and it was commissioned, paid for by NASA. And the study goes through in great detail how NASA just doesn't get enough political and financial support, and therefore the agency is suffering. And part of the problem is that it's shifting so much of its activity to the private sector that a lot of its employees now are nothing more than caretakers of those private contracts. They don't have enough to do. And so we should give NASA more money and shift control back to NASA so those people in NASA can do the work instead. Of course, this report was absurd. It basically, NASA got what it wanted. It wanted to be it wanted an endorsement of bigger funding and more money and more employees. What really the report should have noted is that NASA, as I mentioned with the Polaris Dawn mission earlier, is becoming irrelevant. We've got right now one private space program, Polaris Dawn. We have SpaceX building Starship Super Heavy to go to both the Moon and the Mars without any major government participation. You've got four different American consortiums building private space stations, one with no government money at all. And based on all that, NASA is becoming irrelevant. The report should have instead said, NASA is doing the right thing by helping private enterprise and its budget should be reduced. But that doesn't happen in D.C. because, my God, reducing a government agency, it's sacrilege. So that's what this report basically is going to be used. They're hoping they can use this report to lobby for a larger budget. And, of course, Congress is all willing to do that because Congress doesn't know where money comes from. They think it grows on trees.
Other people's money. What is a cell phone satellite?
Okay, so this company, AST Space Mobile, they already launched a prototype satellite, and the idea is to put together a constellation in orbit that would allow all cell phones to access it. And the idea, of course, is that cell phone towers have gaps in their coverage. Well, an orbiting constellation would cover the gaps. In fact, it would cover everything. And so AST has now launched its first five operational cell phone satellites. What's interesting is who launched AST Space Mobile's first five operational cell phone satellites. It was launched by SpaceX on a Falcon 9. And what one must understand is that SpaceX has also been upgrading its Starlink satellites to do the exact same thing. So SpaceX was launching someone that's a direct competitor to its Starlink system. And so I note that fact because people like the FCC and other FAA and other regulatory people in D.C. like to accuse SpaceX of being a monopoly. But they don't do that. They are willing to launch competitors' satellites to make some money, but also to demonstrate that they're not trying to squelch competition in the process.
The Chinese version of X-37B, what's it for, Bob? Do we know its mission?
No, it's probably comparable to the X-37B in the United States. It's a mini reusable shuttle. It's flown now three times. It completed its third mission lasting 276 days. Lasting 268 days. The second mission was 276. It goes up. The kind of things it can do is test satellites, test materials to bring back to look at, test engineering, and possibly also do reconnaissance and other kinds of engineering tests. Every one of these missions has released other satellites, and the last two have done proximity rendezvous maneuvers with one of those objects. And so this is all engineering testing. We don't know much more than that, but that's, you know, they've actually been very secretive, much more secretive than the military has been on the X-37B. But they've now they landed it for after its third mission, and they'll probably do more flights.
Does the U.S.'s X-37B have a military component?
It's built by the military, so it's absolutely got a. That's its main. That's without question. That's one of the things it's intended to do, is to provide military test bed for things like reconnaissance satellites. They can also use it to launch and possibly inspect other satellites. Use it to do reconnaissance in places that they had not intended to do. It's up there. They can maneuver it to new places. It's a military project.
To China, to a coastal spaceport at Wenchang. What happened?
They had a hurricane, or as they say in Asia, a typhoon. The typhoon Yagi came through on September 6th through Wenchang, through the Hainan Island that it's on, and did a lot of damage. We don't know what the very specific damage because China is very transparent, but it appears it did damage to the launch towers, to two of the launch towers at the Wenchang spaceport. And how much damage we don't know. There are indications that maybe the cheap manufacturing techniques of China might have contributed to the damage, but that's unclear. Either way, they are now experiencing what American Florida experiences routinely is when hurricane season comes along. You got to be careful. Your towers have to be built to withstand the arrival of a hurricane, John.
An Italian rocket company, Avio, is this by itself, or are there other Italian companies?
This is an Italian rocket company. They make the Vega family of rockets and have been for many years for Ariane Space. But European Space Agency in Europe is phasing out Ariane Space because it's just a middleman. And it's giving the ownership of the rockets back to the companies that Ariane Space used to manage. And so Avio builds the Vega rockets. It's just retired the Vega. It's got the Vega C right now. It is now outlining its future rocket plans to upgrade the Vega C as well as go to a more powerful Vega E rocket and eventually come up with a reasonable version of that. Avio now has its own rocket in Italy being built that they can market privately. And so that puts them in the same boat as all the other new rocket startups. And once again, highlights how Europe is beginning to move in on the market that those new American rocket startups were beginning to grab 3 years ago until they got shut down by regulatory red tape.
UK awarding a contract to Astroscale ClearSpace. The question about UK awarding contracts, this is different than approving spaceports. They do actually.
That's correct. That's correct. The Space Agency of the UK is trying to encourage development of the space industry. And so it awarded a small $3 million contract. This is a continuing contract for a project that's being done by the Japanese company Astroscale and the Swiss company ClearSpace, both of which are involved with removing space junk as well as orbital tug maneuver situations. And these two companies working together are putting together a demo project to remove on the same mission two different satellites. And so this money is to continue that work, getting the design reviews done for these two companies. And so once again, this is a case of the United Kingdom trying to encourage a space junk removal industry within the confines of Europe.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.